A very good afternoon to all brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. So today is the 27th February 2022, Sunday. We will be continuing our sharing from this book, the ninth lesson of the six patriarchs, Blackbaum Sutta. In Mahayana Mandarin, it's pronounced as Liu Zhu Tan Xing. Okay. We are at page 40, from where we stop. We are at the commentary. So, just a recap. After Hui Ning received the transmission from the fifth patriarch, Hong Ren, he left. Then, after that, I think the temple came to know that the patriarchship has been transmitted to Hui Ning. So there were some, I think, quite a lot of this monk who expects Shen Xiu to be the one receiving it was very unhappy. So they decided to chase after Hui Ning to get back the rope and the bat. So that was what happened. And after that, there was one Bhikkhu Hui Ming. He is very strong. He can run very fast. So he was able to catch out with Hui Ning. So we are at the commentary part. Bhikkhu Hui Ming was coarse and uneducated. He never opened his mouth unless he was to scold somebody. And if they refused to listen to him, he would beat them up. He could smash a rock of several hundred pounds with one blow. With this extraordinary strength, he became a fourth-class army officer. Hui Ming had one particular trait. His feet were covered with feathers, which enabled him to run faster, could travel 60 miles a day, compared to ordinary men 30 miles. His feather feet and great strength carried him far ahead of the others. As he flew along his mind race, he will get the rope and the bow, and then it will be mine. Sorry, he said, I will get the rope and the bow, and then it will be mine. It belongs to the strongest man. When Hui Ning saw this big, crude, feathered, fitted pursuer, he was a bit frightened. Although he had obtained the Dhamma, he had just begun to cultivate and did not yet have great spiritual power. So he shouted into empty space, "These rope and bowl are symbols of the faith. How can you take them by force? How can there be any dispute? What do you think?" Hui Ming had actually intended to grab the rope and the bat and run, but he could not move them. Why couldn't he move them? After all, he is so strong and he could have smashed the bat to smitten with a single blow and have ripped the rope off shreds. Yet, for all his strength and as light as the rope was, he couldn't botch it. This indicates that there are Dhamma protectors, gods, dragons, and others of the eighth division present guarding the rope and the bowl. Since you couldn't grab them, he thought. Since he couldn't grab them, he thought, that's strange. I can't use force here. I will ask for the Dhamma instead. Had he truly been seeking the way, he wouldn't have first tried to grab the bat and the bowl, but would immediately have said, "Cultivator, cultivator, I came for the Dhamma, not for the rope and the bow. Don't you think my opinion about this is logically sound?" But they would comment, "Of course it's sound." Hui Ning emerged and sat in lotus position on the rock. Hui Ming bowed to the six patriarchs. He understood now that the Dhamma of the Buddha and Bodhisattva cannot be taken by force. "You said you come for the Dhamma," said Hui Ning. "Did you really come for the Dhamma and not to steal the rope and the bowl? That's fine. put aside all condition, put your mind to rest. See, again, he asked swimming, don't think of anything else, relax your mind. Stop grasping a condition and then I will explain Dhamma clearly for you. And this part is very interesting. For 78 minutes, the great master Huining sat waiting. Neither he nor Huiming gave rise to a single thought. I mean, he teach him to silence his mind. Everything stopped. Not even the ghost and spirit knew what was happening. Everyone doesn't know what happened. Then, according to a commentary, he said, everything was empty. Means the mind, everything, silence, empty. Huiming was not giving rise to thought. He was not thinking. North, south, east, west. So Huining said, with no thought of good and no thought of evil, at just that moment, what is superior means original face. So the way Huining taught this Huiming is, at the moment when his mind settled down without thought, he asked him this very important question. With no thought of good or bad or evil duality, at just that moment, what is Supreme Huiming's original face? So this one straight away can awaken a practitioner. It's just like I always put for the inquiry or inquiry to your of course my and I call it Kung An. I use layman's language. When you meditate until there is no thought, you have to contemplate and inquire without thought. Who are you? What are you? Are you the thought? What is that on my mind? So all these are the result of meditation. When you can meditate until the mind is completely still, silent, without thought, then you will understand all this. This one becomes a very natural thing for you to understand. That's why Huineng guide this Huiming to do the simple meditation. He said, give up everything, don't do anything. Don't think of whatever causes and condition behind or trying to justify why you come here to seek the Dhamma and not to steal the bud and the rope. All these are the mind, Sankara activity. When they are active, you cannot realize your true mind. You cannot understand truth. So with this, we may understand that we continue with the sharing. Okay. Huiming was not giving rise to thought anymore. He was not thinking. All the four directions, north, south, east, west, or no more thought. So Huiming said, with no thought of good or no thought of evil, at just that moment, who are you? What are you? What is your original face? Is a direct translation from Mandarin, Ben Lai, the Mian Mo. Since the sixth patriarch was at that time still a layman, he respectfully addressed Huiming as superior one. The word, what means who? In the Dayan school, we meditate on the question, who is reciting the Buddha's name, Sei Chai Nian Po. When Huiming heard the word what, he became enlightened. Oh, he said, originally it was just this way, suchness. Hearing this word, have you become enlightened? So this is Chen Hua's question to the audience. Okay. What is the time now? I asked at that time, almost 4:30. I think maybe we can stop here at page 106. The rest of you can go back and read about it. Maybe we can discuss it at another session. Then after that, Next Sunday is 13th of September. After that, we will be going to Potosan, China. So this one was at that time, just before we went to Potosan on the 13th of September. I have got something on. I forgot what it is already. Oh, now I remember. My son is coming back. Okay, maybe we cancel the next Sunday class. Then, because of our Potosan spiritual trip, we have to cancel yet another Sunday class. So we will have it after Potosan trip, which is at the end of the month. We arrive on Friday. Then at least we all can rest on Saturday. If you all are too tired, please let me know. And we can also cancel that Sunday class. Otherwise, we can have that one. Cecily say it's full moon day on that day, 15 September. And you have your celebration here. And then we might as well cancel it. We'll be too tired having to clean up the place and doing all those preparation, right? Maybe for 3 Sundays we shall take a break and we shall start again in October. Okay, so far any question? This page 106, I will read through it quickly. Then we can reflect and contemplate on it. Okay, then we go to the sutra part. Hui Ming asked further, apart from the secret speech and secret meaning just spoken, is there yet another secret meaning? Hui Ming say, what has been spoken to you is not a secret. If you turn the illumination within, Hui Quang Pan Zhao, you means you reverse the light and look within. The secret is with you all the time. Hui Ming said, although Hui Ming was at Huang Mei, he had not yet awakened to his original face. Then my comment in bracket, it means to his own true nature. Now that he had been favored with this instruction, he is like one who drank water and know for himself whether it's cold or hot or warm. The cultivator is now Hui Ming's master. Then Hui Ming say, if you feel that way, then you and I have the same master, Huang Mei. Protect yourself well. Hui Ming asked further, where should I go now? Hui Ming said, stop at Yuan and dwell at Ming. So this was the instruction by Hui Ming to Hui Ming. Later on, you will see the relevant link and connection. So this part was how Hui Ming, after he had suddenly understood what that nature was, he thought there was some other teaching. That's why he asked, apart from the teaching you have taught me, is there yet another secret meaning? Hui Ming say, if you look within, reverse the light and realize that nature, you will understand everything. It is nothing esoteric or secret. Actually, the true teaching is very simple, very direct. The funny thing is that before you have the condition, you can never understand. Before you develop the ability to have that direct seeing or that silent mind, you cannot understand. That's why Dhamma is very strange, simple and yet very profound. Can only be realized by the wise, each for themselves. And that saying is very true. Okay, we will stop here. So do you all have any question or anything that you want to discuss? Ask or share regarding the 6 Patriarch Platform Sutta, which is still in the introduction phase. We are finishing off the part on how Hui Ming or Hui Ning came to know about the 5th Patriarch. He then determined to visit the fifth patriarch, then how he reported to the fifth patriarch on arrival, and later on how he was transmitted the patriarchship, then how he left, then how he was instructed to go south, lie low and wait for condition, then how he met Hui Ming, and how he instructed Hui Ming. So this is the initial part of the Six Patriarch Platform Sutta, which is already very important and very useful because there are a lot of very profound teaching within. Then after this is the part on how he came out to share the Dhamma regarding his life with the hunters. I still don't know how much was written of it in the commentaries by Xuanhua. I haven't read it myself too. Anyway, we will come to it later. Then later, after he had come out from his 16 years of lying low with hunters, when condition has ripened for him to come out to share the Dhamma, that's when the interesting part of his teaching started to surface. That one is at the later part. Okay, anybody wants to ask any question? If you don't have, then maybe we can have our meditation. So at that time, we end the sutra section for meditation. But today we are still early, so we will continue with the meditation part. 4.1, session 2. Today I can give you more time to meditate because we end at 4:30 exactly. Since everybody has been here before, you all can start your meditation straight away. We will have 45 minutes of silent awareness meditation. This one later, after this, we will also do one. Can somebody help off the light? We are deliver a whooping jingsa. Just relax body and mind and maintain silent inner awareness. So this is always an instruction. Like Hui Ning, how he teach Hui Ming. Forget about everything, don't think, do nothing. Relax, maintain awareness. So this part is very important. If you have already trained, then you just stabilize your sati. If not, if you need to train your mind, then do it. Just relax body and mind and maintain the inner silence or silent inner awareness. Then if you have already stabilized your sati, you only need to stabilize it. Oh, sorry, if you already stabilized your sati, you only need to relax, maintain awareness, and silence your mind completely to develop the meditation. Then your self nature or true nature will meditate on its own. Then you will understand clearly everything that is going on within your form and mind. So 45 minutes of meditation. I rang the bell. Okay, for those who still wants to continue to meditate, you can continue. For those who have had enough, slowly and mindfully come out of your meditation. This one is after the meditation session. I will always advise the cultivator to do that. Always remember, this is the mind that you have trained. And because it's already trained, the spiritual faculties will be there. And when the spiritual faculties are there, the mental hindrance will be gone. And because it's already trained, this mind will silent, will listen to you, and you can use it to meditate. If you want it to be silent, it will be silent. If you want it to be peaceful, it will be peaceful. If you want it to be aware, you will just do that. And such a mind is a meditative mind. Such a mind can develop heedfulness, and you can use it to cultivate daily mindfulness, leading to the heedfulness so that you can insight into phenomena to understand clearly who you are and what you are, and also what is going on within your own form and mind. All of the activity within your five aggregates of form and mind, you will understand them and you will see them. Then you will come to experience all the essential them. And through that, you will understand the Buddha Dhamma very clearly and easily. That's why spiritual faculty can allow you to have the quality of mind that can understand spiritual teaching very quickly and easily, as opposed to mental hindrance that will hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness, and inner awareness. So these two states of mind are very different. That's why before the Buddha passed away, he said, strive on with heedfulness. You must have this heedfulness. And as we have learned, to be heedful is to be ever mindful. Then use it to cultivate the wisdom or noble eightfold path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. And the bulk of it is the cultivation of the four foundation of mindfulness. So these are key takeaway or pointers to understanding meditation. Then meditation reporting followed by question and answer session 4.2. Now we will open up for meditation reporting and question and answer Q&A. If you have any questions related to the meditation or the teaching, or how to apply what you have learned to help you understand life and overcome your life problem, you can ask. Here is the microphone. Just raise your hand and we will pass the mic to you. Anybody wants to report his or her meditation or ask any question, you can. Then after that, I think everybody didn't really respond. So I asked, how come everybody is so quiet? No question. What about your meditation? You just had to report your meditation accordingly. It's exactly as per how you have done it. Ah, yes. Please pass the mic to Sister Susan Sadio. Sister Susan asked, he said, brother, regarding my meditation, I'm aware when I'm in the lying down posture, I'm definitely more relaxed when compared to my sitting. During sitting, I'm aware there is more tension. So should I just continue to lie down every time I want to do sitting meditation? Then my answer, understanding lying down meditation, this part is very important. I think we transcribed it out later on and have it in a small booklet form. I say it's up to you because there are times to sit and time to lie down. If you want to train your mind, it's easier to do it while in the sitting posture. Yeah, in the sitting posture, you can maintain awareness or mindfulness of the in and out breath and anapanasati better. Initially, the sitting posture is usually more conducive. And later on, as you develop the ability to have this meditative mind that is already so quiet, so peaceful, so clear, and so tranquil, which means you have developed the ability to go into stillness of mind, which is paucity rather easily. Then when that happens, if you continue with your sitting posture, you will find it very difficult to go into that relaxed state of a free mind, to maintain the state of tranquility and stillness of mind, unless you know how to relax very well. When you have the ability to relax so well, the whole of your body and mind will be in the state of complete relaxation, even while in the sitting posture. But because of your cross-legged posture, there will be energy built up without you realizing it. Then this energy build up together with your cross-legged posture actually restrict the flow of chi. And that is why during that time you are not so relaxed. And you should try meditating with the lying down posture. then the mind that has the ability to become so quiet and so still will become a free mind that is naturally relaxed. Initially, the mindfulness or awareness is at the anapanasati or the in and out breath region until it becomes very subtle. Then finally, one day, it will drop down to the heart or mind base. Then you just stay there because that is the location which is very near the gateway to your nature. From there, if you continue to relax and silence your mind, then one day that silent mind and still pure awareness that is without thought and craving will be able to detect the gateway and go in. The lying down posture is the most relaxed posture as you have found out on your own. This is a very important posture because the lying down posture, because in the lying down posture, you do not create any restriction or constriction in your flow of chi. Then chances of you going into concentration is much less because this energy cannot build up. If you are in a cross-legged position, all your energy field and chi will be building up without you knowing it. Then from your spine, it can go up to the brain. Then you can push it up to develop all the jhanas. But if you are in the lying down posture, and you know how to relax into it, all this energy field will not build up. The moment you are relaxed, the moment you relax into it, it will stabilize. Then after that, it will become very quiet, very still, until you are very sensitive. During that time, you will come to understand that the lying down posture is the best posture. You can detect the gateway after you have become very quiet and very still. Then all your yin and yang energy, which you have developed and stored up earlier, whether via mindfulness or energy field training from your qigong or tan tian or yoga, wai tan gong, etc., or whatever energy field related practice, they will all melt inside into the gateway. And during that time, the meditator or the cultivator, which is the form and mind that is in that state, will understand that all this yin and yang energy as it go through the gateway will be transformed and purified into pure energy. This is the pure energy that is already intelligent. This one is not thought based because there is no thought behind. You just silent, relax and maintain awareness. And the last support is trust. You just silent and don't do anything, no thought involved. Then the pure energy will develop the internal movement, which most people cannot understand because they have never done it before. That is the real opening of all the nadis and chakra within your internal bodily movements. All this will happen without any thought, without any directive or effort, via mental intention from the top, which means there is no will involved, no effort involved, or mental intention involved. And there is also nobody doing the meditation. So this is the reason why Jay Krishnamurti, via his understanding, said, wherever there is a meditator, there is no meditation. And wherever there is effort, there is also no meditation. All this, the cultivator will come to understand them clearly. When this transformation happens, your mind will become very still, very quiet, and very tranquil, very fast. After that, you can even maintain this state of awareness or mindfulness in the midst of your daily life very easily. The reason being, by the time you can detect the gateway, you must have already progressed very far in your meditation, and you must have already touched your nature. You are already like winning, and the other great beings understood what the true mind is. So the key to understanding meditation is posture is not critical. You can use any posture. Even in the Satipatthana Sutta or the Four Foundational Mindfulness Sutta, it is stated that all the four postures, standing, sitting, walking, or lying down, you can use them to meditate. But the real wisdom or insight comes from meditation in daily life. After you have developed all this ability to be peaceful, to be quiet, and to be aware, and to be heedful, then you will have to come out into life and apply this trained mind state, which is the awareness or mindfulness, to insight into phenomena, to insight into the three universal characteristics of impermanent, suffering state, and non-self or empty nature via the direct seeing, to penetrate the Dhamma. And later on, to reflect and contemplate via the second turning of the fourth noble truth, to prepare the base for receiving truth. Then after that, any of the three turning, either first, second, or third turning, can awaken your nature. Because by then, most of the time, you are aware, silent, and heedful, that it can trigger the awakening anytime. After you have had this initial wisdom, only then can you cultivate the real noble eightfold path and the four foundation of mindfulness in a more refined and deeper manner. After you have developed all this understanding born of daily mindfulness, you can lie down and do the meditation again. By then, it will be very different, because during that time, you will understand very clearly and you will know what to do. Then you will understand that the lying down posture meditation has its purpose and function, because to realize the more stable Nibbana, you need a formal posture, and the lying down posture is the most conducive. There are two types of awakening. The first type is via the sainthood way in daily mindfulness, whereby the realization of Nibbana is just a glimpse or a moment of cessation of the form and mind. Those realized by the Sotapan, first stage of sainthood, and the Sakadagami, second stage of sainthood, then there is a second type of awakening that is more stable and longer, lasts longer. Those realized by Anagami, third stage of sainthood, the Arahan, fourth stage of sainthood, and the other great beings. For the first two stages of sainthood, the cessation happens only for a moment, or momentarily, for one moment of cessation. Only then, is momentary for one moment of cessation only. But that's good enough, because that itself is the realization of Nibbana. That moment is enough to awaken, especially the Sotapan and Sakadagami sainthood way. And this can happen in the daily life while cultivating the daily mindfulness. One doesn't need to be in the form of meditative posture. But for Anagami or Arahan onward, usually they will have to go into cessation for a longer period. To realize the second type of awakening, one need to be in a more stable form of meditative posture. During the early days, most of them do it in their daily life via the first and second turning of the Four Noble Truths. That is via hearing the sutta, followed by contemplation, reflection, and inquiry into what the Buddha has proclaimed or taught. Then there are some who develop samatha meditation first. We are going into jhana first. And that is the reason why they like the sitting posture, which is more conducive. But later on, they still have to release their energy field and return to normal awareness and go into daily mindfulness to develop the initial wisdom. We are insight into the three universal characteristics of nature to realize the enlightenment. After that, they will sit again and go into the formal meditation to realize the more stable cessation. Their sitting can also awaken them. During the time of the Buddha, a lot of his disciples did it in the sitting posture. But later on, for those who understand, they will come to realize that the lying down posture is in fact more conducive. That is also the reason why later on the Buddha was in the lying down posture during his Parinibbana. Whenever he rested, he was always in the lying down posture. This lying down posture was seldom taught because most living beings don't have the ability to meditate that way. If they are not trained, they tend to fall asleep very fast. Then it becomes sleeping meditation and not lying down meditation anymore. That's the reason why it was seldom or not taught, because very few people can do it. And because of that, it was hardly taught. But for those who understand, they will know. The moment you can do the lying down meditation, you are already very good and an advanced cultivator. The lying down posture has its purpose. It is needed when you are developing the second time of awakening, when you go into this so-called cessation of form and mind to realize Nibbana. In the lying down posture, you can develop it much easily. You can go into it very fast, and you can stay there for quite a while. Then it depends if you are ready. If you are ready and about to do it, you have to develop some form of tactfulness, because you have to let those who are around you understand what you are doing. Otherwise, they may think you are already dead when you go into that cessation. You are really like a dead person. The only difference between you and the dead person is you won't become cold or very cold. You won't become like the dead corpse. Your body will not rot and your body will not emit those foul smells. But you really have no heartbeat. Even the brain activity and everything else can cease. No more activity, no more consciousness, nothing. The whole body and mind is like no different from a dead person, except the stillness, pure energy of Nibbana. They are still within the form. And because that being is in that state, so in order to prevent any confusion, it's advisable to let people know, so that when you go into it, people will understand. But as far as I know, you don't have to worry so much. Yeah, it is not easy to go into that state for a long period of time. It depends on your past cultivation. It depends on your understanding. And it also depends on how skillful you are. And most of these cultivators who when they go into this cessation, they will know how to come out. It is automatic, but you cannot predict when to come out. Where it is the unconditioned. You can only come out at the time when the conditions are there for it to come out. So all these are part and parcel of lying down meditation. And lying down meditation is only to be done after you have trained your mind very well. After you have developed positive enlightenment factor until your mind is very stable and very still, and after your daily mindfulness has stabilized, then you will come to understand why this lying down posture is the most relaxed, conducive and appropriate. And then you can do it, especially at night when you are at home. You have to learn to meditate in the lying down posture so that you can rest very well, so that when you arise the next day, you can become very fresh and mindful. The other reason is because human beings spend over 1/3 of their time sleeping. If you sleep 8 hours a day, it's exactly 1/3. If you sleep even 6 hours a day, it's 1/4 of a day. Regarding the lying down posture, meditation, you can understand and develop the ability to meditate in that posture. It will help you a lot. It can help speed up your cultivation. This type of formal meditation can be done anytime, even when you are resting. And finally, you want to understand what is 24-hour meditation. You have to be skillful in the lying down meditation first. And then you will come to realize that you can be mindful throughout the day. And 24-hour meditation is possible. I can share this with you all because this nature of mine had done it before during the early years of the cultivation. So it's all up to you. Don't worry about the posture. Whichever posture that is more conducive to you, use it. You only need to understand your meditation focus by inquiry. Do you still need to train your mind? That is the question. You have already stabilized the sati. There is no need to train your mind anymore. Then by all means, whatever posture will also be suitable for you, because by then your spiritual faculties are already established. Since you have already trained your mind, hence you can meditate via a relaxed mind. You can silence your mind easily, and then you can develop whatever understanding you want. Then you will understand very clearly what this form of mind is all about. It is for you to use. So use it to live life, to meditate, to develop understanding, and to cultivate. And it is also for you. And it is all up to you. Then whatever posture that is the most suitable and conducive, you will also come to know. Because by then, very likely, throughout the day, you are already heedful and mindful. So there is no difference between standing, walking, sitting, or lying down. No difference at all. Then meditation becomes like a part of your nature. You are in that state of heedfulness or awareness throughout the day. You don't have to rely on anything else to be mindful. You don't need an object of meditation anymore. Then you will come to realize that all these methods and techniques or object of meditation are only initial skillful means used by cultivator to train and anchor their mind, and it has nothing to do with the meditation. It's just to train the heedless thinking mind to make it mindful and heedful. But a lot of people cannot understand this very important point. That's why that day I forwarded one email regarding this to you all recently. Have you all seen it? It was written by a monk by the name of Bhikkhu Kumara of, I think, SBS, Taiping. According to that email, he said he has been asking many times and many places by yogi on what method or technique of meditation does he teach. He said he didn't know how to answer them, and every time he answered them, he found his answer to be unclear and inadequate. Then he came up with one answer which he thought was very good. I will try to get it from the email and read to you. What read to you so that you all can discuss it, so that we can discuss it. This may be good because this can help clear up a lot of things. That's why even monks and cultivators are also not sure and are not clear about all this. Like, what is meditation? What is the meditation as taught by the Buddha? And what are methods and techniques or object of meditation for? So when I read the email, I felt I should send it out to our Kanyamita, to them, to develop their reflection and contemplation so that hopefully they can understand better. Let me try to look it up. Okay, I've got it. According to him, he said, from time to time, I've been asked this question, Bhante, what method do you teach? And I keep having trouble answering it properly. They want me to name it, and I don't have one for it. Usually, I resort to saying, teach this, I teach this, and I teach that. In that way, it can seems like I have a modern way of teaching. Some time ago, it dawned upon me, I don't teach a method. I'm not interested in that. Instead, I teach people, I show them how to free themselves from suffering in the best way I know for them at that time. Every experienced teacher knows that every student is different. To think that one method fits all is unreasonable. Sometimes I conveniently fall back on some sort of standard methods too. And that's when I'm not operating at my best. That's when I'm not using discernment and the results aren't so good. Results are the best when I drop all ideas of method, pay full attention to the person, and let wisdom decide. So I don't want to use any specific method. But whatever method that is suitable, even if I have never used it before, that is, one can occur spontaneously to me. So next time, I know how to answer the question of what method I teach. I try not to. I teach people. So posted by the monk, Kumara Bhikkhu. So with this, we can open it up for discussion. What are your views and understanding on this, basing on your cultivation's understanding now? What are methods and what are techniques? Do you know why he has a problem or not? If I'm not wrong, he studied Bhayankati's teaching too, and he also used Bhayankati's technique or the work using the four lines of questioning to teach. And he also shared a bit of the power of now, a bestseller book written by Eckhart Tolle. And because of that, his student asked him, so what is your teaching? What method do you teach? He couldn't describe them because those teachings are neither a method or a technique. It is more of an inquiry. With this, I hope you all can have a better understanding of the above topic. And then there is an appending on what is the work. This one is the teaching by Bhayankati. So this one is very good. You should pay attention. What is the work? The work is a simple yet powerful process of inquiry that teaches you to identify and question the thought that caused all the suffering in the world. It is a way to understand what is hurting you and to address the cause of your problem with clarity. It is most basic. In its most basic form, the work consists of four lines of questioning and the turnaround. So after I go through this, you will be able to understand. So Bhayankati used this four line of questioning to turn around. Ask the four questions, Bhayankati said. The work is meditation. It's about opening to your heart, not about trying to change your thoughts. Ask the question, then go inside and wait for the deep silence to surface. See, she also meditate silent, then develop understanding. investigate each of your statements from this four line of questioning. Number one, what your thought has been telling you, is it the truth? Is it true? Yes or no? If no, move on to three. If yes, then you move on to two. Can you be absolutely sure that it is the truth? That it is true? Means what the thought tell to you. Do you believe the thought? And when you believe the thought, what happened to you? And is it the truth? So these are the line of questioning. However, the third question is very important. The third line of questioning. How do you react or what happened when you believe that thought? So a lot of us, before we have the Dhamma, we don't understand. We tend to depend on our views, opinion, conditioning, and belief system. Then from there we act. That's not acting according to memory, it's not acting at all. So when we have our views and opinion of things, we will use that to act. Then that is what your thought is telling you. Like your thought may arise a certain type of views or opinion. So what they say may not be true. Why do they have to believe in God? Then sometimes when you are in a very unhappy mind state, when you are trying to blame people, when there is envy, jealousy, or people whom you don't like saying negative thing to you, so the thought will turn around and tell you why you allow him to scold you or say bad things about you. You should confront him, you should challenge him. Or sometimes the thought may say, if it's regarding relationship, the spouse, hey, your partner is cheating on you, what are you going to do? Are you going to allow him or her to continue to do that to you? And the word is the Chinese tradition, Kenny Tai Li Mao and other things, means your spouse is getting along with somebody behind your back. So all this are what the thought say. So the third line of questioning is, if you believe the thought, what happened to you? You sure become unhappy, angry, miserable, then what do you do? Oh, you want to hire a private investigator, you want to take revenge, you do all sorts of things. So all this will create more and more misunderstanding, negativity, and it won't solve your problem. It will deepen or strengthen your misunderstanding and create more and more conflict or argument, and finally may end up in having a lot of anger, hatred towards each other, leading to argument, divorce, and all those things. So now we go back to the fourth line of questioning. How will you be without the thought? Or what will happen to you if you don't believe the thought? Then this is where the answer is, Byron Katie said. I discovered that when I believe my thought, I suffer. But then, when I didn't believe them, I didn't suffer. And that this is true for every human being. Freedom is as simple as that. I found that suffering is optional. I found a joy within me that has never disappeared, not for a single moment, even until now. That joy is in everyone, always, Brian Cathy. So it seems this four line of questioning is very powerful. Because when you believe the thought, your envy, your jealousy, your anger, your hatred, they will increase, just like the Sabba Asava Sutta. Things that are unfit for attention, you pay attention. Means you believe the thought, and this thought is wrong thought. What are wrong thought? Thought that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. These are all wrong thought. So if you believe the thought, what happened? Your anger, your hatred, they will become intensified. Then sometimes your fear, your phobia, your insecurity, they will be intensified. Where your thought project create fear in you. Yeah, all these are not reality, but the thought project and say, what if? Then that projection can actually create a lot of fear, unnecessary fear. So if you believe the thought has power over you. The understanding is, what I normally share with Kayamita is, it's only a thought. How come it has such power over you? Can make you so fearful, so miserable. Can make you even to the extent of entering depression. Thinking the same thought until it becomes a cocoon of depressive thought. Keep on haunting you. Keep on creating more and more fear and anxiety in you. So all these are a result of your wrong view, your lack of understanding. That's why I define wrong thought as thought that condition your fear, your worry, your anxiety, your sorrow, your lamentation, your insecurity, your phobia and all those things. And all this wrong thought has the evil roots of greed, hatred and delusion. Where you attach, you cling, you give meaning to the thought. That's why thought has power over you. But if you don't give meaning to the thought ceases to have power. What is thought? Your mental thinking process, consciousness, it arises and passes away. Is a tool for us to use. That's why the Buddha taught us to use the thought appropriately, to arise the right thought using our right view, and not to create wrong thought or negative thought. So right thought is very important. So all this wrong thought, they are the one that create all the negativity of mind state that leads to suffering. So if you believe your thought before you are enlightened, before you have the wisdom, you will get yourself entangled, just like what Byron Katie came to know. Take for example just now, the thought may tell you your spouse is cheating on you, or after the doctor say, we have to carry out a biopsy to confirm whether the cancer is malignant or not. Then during the time when they do it, the thought project creates so much fear. Fear that the result come out turn positive. And when it turn positive, you may not have much time left to live. Then you're scared it's stage 4, stage 3. Then even if it's stage 1 or 2, you may have to go through the treatment process and it will cost you quite a bit. It's not cheap. So all these are the projection, but it's not a reality. It's just what the thought trying to project and create fear in the individual. Well, when thought project, it has such power because you believe the thought. You allow the thought to have power over you, means the attachment, that craving, project and create the fear. And these are all wrong thoughts. So what are right thought? Right thought is without the evil root. Like the Buddha say, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. So if I accept this truth through an understanding, condition like that, things will be like that, like my physical body or health. If I don't take care when I was young, or chemically the DNA was like that, then when the condition arise, it will go that way, the way of nature. So if it happened already, that is a reality. I have to accept it. When I accept that reality, I come to terms with that reality, I don't have to believe what the thought tells me, the projection, asana. I only have to come to terms with that truth, that reality. Then when I am able to accept it, without worrying about it, without creating unnecessary thought projection or wrong thought, then I realize I'm at peace. At this moment, I don't have a problem at all. The only problem is that so-called situation can still be a problem because the reality has set in. You have cancer or your spouse has cheated upon you. It could be the truth. It cannot be denied. But the Dhamma teaching is, if that is the truth, you have to come to terms with it. You have to accept it. You don't go and believe it and allow thought to have power over you and make you miserable. That's why Bhayan Kathy introduced the third line of questioning and the fourth line of questioning to show you how deluded you are. So the third line of questioning is, if you believe the thought, what happened to you? Like I said just now, it become wrong thought, it creates fear in you, envy, jealousy, hatred, all the wrong thought make you miserable, very unhappy. Yeah. Then you become emotional. Yeah. Then the last line of questioning, the fourth line of questioning is the solution, the way out. Without believing the thought, without thinking the thought. Yeah, before you come to know all this, that thought was not around, is it? That time you were peaceful, happy, going around doing the thing. But the moment you hear about it, believe in it, you become miserable. So like Bhayan Kathy say, if you believe the thought before you have the wisdom, you will get into trouble. But if you don't believe the thought, you are peaceful. But it doesn't mean your problem is solved. And that's not. The problem is still there. That's why finally you have to approach it from the Dhamma understanding, the Dhamma approach. Means cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path to realize the understanding. Because according to Lord Buddha, if you cultivate this Noble Eightfold Path, it will lead to the end of all suffering. So the first path factor is right view, to accept the reality, means no need to believe the thought. Just confront nature, confront the eight realities of life and existence. Accept it. Then ask yourself, what happened? How can I resolve this amicably and move on? So usually the right view will tell you it is due to karma. We are all born of karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. If it is karma, then there is a reason behind all this. So it's not about right and wrong anymore. Well, this is a nature's law. You reap what you sow. So knowing this, having this right view, you have to come to terms with this reality and tell yourself, how can I resolve this amicably? So the answer is very simple. Like the Buddha said, you do what you have to do. You need to ask for forgiveness. You ask for forgiveness. Repentant, you do it. Then you have to follow the advice of the Buddha to turn your life around, to develop the wholesomeness of karma. Then do. Then invoke power merits for turnaround. So do all this. and resolve it amicably by applying the next power factor, arising right thought, wholesome thought without the evil root, without negativity of emotion, that evil condition, right speech, gentle, pleasant, appropriate, good speeches, that leads to harmony, that leads to love, that leads to all the solution that you need in life. Then be appreciative of what people have done for you. Then speak in a very pleasant, gentle, and caring manner. Then express your love, your compassion, your sincerity, your gratitude. Then, if you meet people who are worthy of respect, express it. Then after that, from the way you conduct yourself, right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, you are following Noble Eightfold Path. Then constantly apply the right livelihood, the way you live your life, no more negativity from now onward. Then the four right effort to constantly purify. The first right effort to abandon all the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action. Then the second right effort to prevent them from arising. Then the third right effort is to cultivate the right thought, right speech, right action that are still not in you. Then the final right effort is to refine upon and perfect all this right thought, right speech, and right action that you have already developed. So this is how the cultivation is to be developed. And to do all this, you need mindfulness. That's like the power factor of mindfulness leading to samadhi, collectedness of mind, unwavering mind, that can trigger off wisdom. Then with wisdom, your right view becomes strengthened. Not only is karma now, you understand the mind, you understand how the paticca samuppada, the dwelling function, then you know who you are, what you are, the form and mind. But this one, the mental part, aggregate the form and mind, they follow this law. So when you understand this law, avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnanam, vijnanam paccaya nama rupam, at the stage of nama rupam, there is the stage where the content of consciousness flows in. So there you will see normal people without dhamma, without wisdom, they will act according to memory, their views, their opinion, their conditioning, and their wrong thought, which is what Bhayan Kathy mentioned. When you believe that thought, that condition, your wrong thought, you suffer, you become miserable. So content of consciousness is very important. You don't go and listen to all those people who don't have the understanding and tell you to cut a feeling. Because they say feeling, condition, craving. So you cut a feeling, craving cannot arise. So what you do? Suppress your anger, suppress your jealousy, your greed. No point. If you suppress them, suppression is not kanti. Kanti is patient enduring. So if you suppress them, it will not be rooted out. It will bottle up and erupt one day. Just like the earlier sharing about patience in the Lotus Sutta. It's the same. So this understanding is very important. So having developed this understanding, then we can transcend the form and mind. We can transcend the conditioned world, the duality, the phenomenal world of form and consciousness. So all this is how we develop wisdom to straighten our view, to enable us to free our mind. So to free the mind is very simple. You must have this right view, right understanding, initial wisdom or Dhamma wisdom, Yoniso Manasikara. That's why you must act according to Dhamma way, according to right view, wisdom, following the Dhamma way, following Noble Eightfold Path. If you apply all this, he will lead to the end of all suffering. So this is basically what you need to know, what you need to understand. And this is the teaching that very few people know how to apply. So with this, maybe we can have our 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation after this. There's one more part I didn't finish. So people who do the work as an ongoing practice commonly report the following benefits. So this one is according to Wire Bhangati's book. He wrote this down in his book, in her book, sorry. He said, if you follow his four line of action, then you will have the understanding to free. Yeah. But he didn't teach people how to free to Noble Eightfold Path. He only teach people not to believe the thought. But not to believe the thought, then what do you do? Because the thought keep on making you miserable, unhappy. So he said, don't believe the thought. But the reality is the problem is still there. And sometimes what the thought is telling you is the truth, is the reality. Your husband or your spouse really cheat on you. Or all those things that your thought tell you, yeah, is the truth. Because disease is a reality, understand? But what the line of questioning is trying to teach you is, don't go and believe those thoughts that has the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, especially the one that condition your thought projection, the wrong thought, that trigger of fear, worry, anxiety, jealousy, and all those things. But he didn't teach you how to solve it. His problem is still there. He just say, don't believe the thought and move on. No. But how can you move on with your life when that thing is not resolved? So very few people can do it. But it seems, according to her, if you really work on this, the four line of questioning, and understand your own foolishness, then you can alleviate your depression. So find resolution. You become more happy. Even happiness is a situation that was once very debilitating. Then decrease your stress. Live with less anxiety and fear. That's why he used the word less. He cannot rule out. Then improve relationship. Because experience deeper connection and intimacy with your partner, your parents, your children, and your friends and yourself. Means here what he's trying to say is, don't believe your thought. Don't allow anything negative to arise. Then move on to resolve whatever misunderstanding so that you can have your relationship and all those things. But without the Dhamma way, I realize you cannot root it out. You cannot root it out. Then number four is reduce anger and fear. Understand what makes you angry and fearful. Then after that, don't think that thought. Then increase mental clarity. And this one is true. Huh? Live and work more intelligently and effectively with integrity. Then you have more energy. Instead of wasting it on your fear, your anger, your hatred, your emotion, your wrong thought, you conserve the energy, huh, to live life, to move on. You think positive. And of course, lastly, is you have more peace. Discover how to become a lover of what is. Means accept the reality. What is the reality. To her, happen already. This is the reality. Don't fight. Then move on with your life. If your spouse don't like you already, that is the reality. Move on. But he didn't teach you how to resolve things amicably. Actually, the way to resolve things amicably is to follow Noble Eightfold Path. And that is the best way. Because I always use the word resolve whatever issue or situation or problem amicably. Amicably means so that nobody lose out or suffer. So that everybody can have this what they call win-win situation after you have made the decision, even to break up, to separate, or even like disease case, when you come to terms with the reality, you don't project your thought, the fear is not there, your mind is more calm, then you read it metta. The positive energy field will actually cause you to recover, recuperate, and your immune system will go up when you don't have fear. Because the fear, the insecurity, the sadness, the sorrow element is the worst negativity of energy that will actually trigger the breakdown in your immune system. And that one can cause cancer and all those things. So mind states are very important. If you don't have negativity or mind state, the wrong thought, instead you develop positive, wholesome thought, it will make a big difference to your immune system, to your happiness, your peace, your joy, everything. So mind state is very, very crucial. Of course, medication help, but depend on what type of medication they give you. If it's just to tranquilize you, make you sleep better, these are all normally drug-based. So it leads to addiction and all those things. It will not really be a long-term solution. I always say it's a temporary solution. Especially the anti-depression pill to overcome what they call insomnia, panic attack. So all these are chemical imbalance type of drugs that they give you, they recommend to you. So when you understand all this, you can deal with this situation. Then you can actually overcome a lot of things in life. That's why the Dhamma is a purifying force. The Dhamma is a solution to all of life problems and situations. But it's not easy to have the Dhamma unless you become very serious and work towards it. Okay, we are on the light. Then you can have your 45 minutes of awareness-based meditation. So always remember, relax body and mind completely. Be at ease. Don't try to do anything. Don't try to know. Then maintain awareness by silencing your mind. Whatever arises, let it arise. Do not resist. Do not try to do anything. Do not even fight it or do anything. Just be at peace. Be at ease. Relax. Maintain awareness. Then stabilize the awareness by allowing it to be mindful for as long as you can. So this initial stage of stabilizing it is very important. Then when the awareness nature surfaces or arises, let it stabilize. After you have done that, or for those who are already skillful, you can settle down very fast and develop that awareness within very fast. Then use it to meditate. Use it to observe, silence everything. Allow the true mind to observe, to understand clearly who are you, what are you, how you function as a human being, and how that nature, through the observation, silent mind observing truth, can awaken, can insight into phenomena, and develop clear understanding. So if you use and apply it accordingly, this meditation will transform you, and you become very different. When you understand all this, you will become very happy, very joyful. Your problem, like suddenly gone. Then you start to understand what is the thinking part. The mundane thinking, the mundane mind. The one that creates a lot of mundane activity, issue. And through delusion, it will attach, it will cling, it will grasp, it will create all the suffering and the misery. Yeah. So when you understand all this, you will know how to straighten your view and develop the clear understanding of who you are, and what is this for you, why you aggregate or form a mind all about. Then without thought, who are you? What that nature is? All this you understand. Then when you understand, you can use it to develop wisdom to help you free your mind, liberate your mind, so that you need not get yourself entangled anymore. So with this, I will let you meditate on your own. Okay, you can slowly, mindfully come out of meditation. We will then continue with our second session, which is meditation reporting.
Yeah. Actually, I realized that on many occasions, I'm still using the thought that when I deal
it's okay. Because as long as you recognize that, then it's okay. Then you have to slowly shift over to awareness. Because awareness-based meditation is not easy to develop. Not until you develop the initial wisdom after having sufficiently understood the Dhamma through contemplation, reflection, and constant hearing of the Dhamma. Then after that, you stabilize your daily mindfulness. Then only the awareness-based understanding can start to take off or be like materialized. Then in the formal meditation, you need to stabilize the awareness nature within to develop more and more understanding about that true mind. And to see clearly how from that true mind, the silent mind, the mundane mind come about. How the dependent origination activity arise and pass away. And all these are part and parcel of the process of awareness-based meditation being developed. So you need to understand this and patiently develop the stability of awareness and stability of daily mindfulness. Then only that mind can transform and develop that type of awareness-based meditation. And then that time, your direct seeing, your direct awakening, your understanding of the Dhamma all will be very different. Then you will start to see a lot of the very subtle, very fine type of mental intention or defilement which you were not able to see before. They start to appear to you because of your stability of mindfulness and awareness. Then you are sensitive. You can know a lot of things. Then you experience slowly the glimpse of cessation coming in. And then as you experience, the understanding will be different again. So this stage will come, but you need to be very committed. Your faith has to be very strong. Sadha, virya, then stabilize your sati, spiritual faculty, stabilize until you become unshakable. That's why you must develop the faith, then diligently persevere and cultivate. Okay?
Yeah, thank you, Radio.
Yeah.
Actually, I take note of what you just share with me. But that time when I realized, I was very surprised because I thought I didn't see it and still doing that. Then there was one time, actually it was my father, We were driving, and then I was asking for the direction of how to go to a certain place.
Yes.
Yeah, so he was kind of impatient with me. Like, to him, he was like, "Aiya, why so easy also, like, don't know."
I cannot remember.
Yeah, like, of course, turn right now. I cannot be turn left, right? If you turn left, then you go back home.
Yeah.
So when he answered that way to me, like I say just now, like, I was not like be aware. I was still using my thought, and I like straight away get upset with him, you know, because
but at least now you are aware. You are aware.
The thing is, even though I was aware, that means I was aware that I was unhappy.
That is very important. That itself is part of the cultivation, the beginning of cultivation, to be aware of your own emotion, your own negativity, your own shortcoming, and all those things. But these are all the mundane mind's creation. So initial stage is to observe, to see, then realize that they are not you. Because when your habitual tendency is still there, when your views, opinion, and conditioning are still there, you will behave that way. Mundane mind goes the way of nature too. Because as long as you don't have the wisdom, you have not straightened your view, your Dhamma is still not stable, it will continue that way, behavior. That's why they call it the heedless mind, the thinking mind, the conditioned arising mind. Well, that mind has not been trained. It's not stable yet. It don't have the understanding. That's why it will continue to behave that way. We call it habitual tendency, heedless thinking, the conditioning. That's why a lot of people didn't even realize that they have been like robot, continuing doing the mechanical movement, thinking, and activity, and they don't live life because they are so conditioned by the habitual tendency. The views, opinion, memory has so much power over them. Like you say, you depend on memory a lot. But when you have clarity of thinking, just like just now you mentioned about driving, is a very good example. You don't believe, you go back and find out. I will give you an example. Let's say some place you haven't been before. Then somebody told it to you. Then you want to go there. I had the benefit of the old school where there is no ways, no internet, no map for me to depend on in the handphone or Google Map and other things. So in the past, what I did is I had this mind that is very good. I want to understand before I go, before I drive. Otherwise, I will get lost. So what your father said is through his experience. That's why he know. Yeah, these are the few roads only. You cannot go wrong. Like the whole of Penang Island, I studied the map until I know how to go around Penang Island. I no need to look at the map to remember or recall anything. You put me in Penang Island, I will find my way back very easily. Because I only look at the strategic main road. Of course, now with the road system, 20 over years, I haven't been back. Maybe change a bit. But the main few old roads are still there. So if let's say you want to go somewhere, if it's new, for the first time, the mind cannot recall or remember because these are new places. You are not familiar. So when it comes to living life, meditation, understanding things, it's the same. Most people have to learn it through memory, If you do it frequently, you drive along that way frequent enough, then you start to be familiar with that area. Then you like, no need to remember, you will know how to go, especially the area around your house. You won't forget one because you used to move around. But if some place which is new, unless you develop this ability to recall or to have a clear mind to see the whole big picture, then you move. And then it's very easy. Even I go KL also, I must see which direction I'm going and what are the main road connecting there. But now with Waze, we depend less on the map. Last time I will buy the map on KL map, Malaysia map, Singapore map. Before I drive, I will read the map. Then I will know what to do on the journey. Then most of the time, I will tell my wife, you just help me by looking at the map, especially Singapore, where it's quite a new place. And I seldom go down there. So she will look at the map. Then I will just tell her, you let me know whether go straight or turn or what. Because I already show him where the destination is. So you look at the map, you will know what are the route possible to move around. But for those who have a clear mind, if it's some place that I'm more familiar with and used to travel, then I look at the map one time, two times, I will have a clear picture. Then when I drive there, I will recall that I will have the clarity to see because I observe and I will look. Or look, even I go to the mall, I will remember where I move and how to go back to the car park and where my car is on. I don't have to like people take camera shot of the parking level, the parking lot and all those things. I still don't have to do all those things. But of course sometimes because of need, I go to a new mall which I haven't been before, then I will take a shot. Just in case that I need to refer. But so far, I don't need to refer. Then when I move, you are observant, means mindful and aware. You will recall, you will recollect on where you came from and roughly which direction you are in. You can. So when it comes to mindfulness training, it's the same. When you are aware, you can observe many things. You can see your own form and mind, how it behaves. How due to its views, opinion, conditioning, and belief system, you become conditioned into those frequent or mechanical way of reacting to life and behavior. Like your father show it to you, that you realize you start to like get unhappy. So all this is the beginning. You start to see, but after you see, you make it a point to straighten your view and to change over, to improve over. But most people don't even have the awareness to be aware. They continue with their thinking, their what they call mundane way of living life. So if you do that, you are not a cultivator with a clear mind to be observant, to observe all this. Actually, when you're attentive and observant, means you are mindful. Of course, the awareness is just that pure awareness. But when you're observant and attentive means you attend to the thing. But you must have the mindfulness to know, like what just now we share, the Bayang Kati one. Things that are fit for attention, you pay attention, like the Dhamma, to learn new things, to understand new things, and you pay attention. But things that are unfit for attention, that leads to negativity of mind state, the arising of the mental hindrance and the evil reality, these are not conducive for the training of the mind. Because when you pay attention to these things, like thought projection, it conditions fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow. And these are very negative mind states. So when it's negative mind state, means it conditions your fear, worry, anxiety, sorrow, lamentation, your greed, hatred, and delusion. It will cause you to have more and more delusion and entanglement. So these are things that are unfit for attention, because when you pay attention to it, it creates more fear, more worry, more anxiety, more insecurity. So these are what the call in the Super Asama Sutta, the unarisen mental hindrance or negative mind state, the asava, they continue to increase, proliferate. But when you reflect on things that are fit for attention, like the Four Noble Truths, to learn new things, to develop the Noble Eightfold Path Factor, the virtual, you realize your mind state are very beautiful. It does not condition all those asava. It conditions right thought, right speech, right action, and mindfulness and all these things. Then you realize these are things that are fit for attention. That's why you pay attention to it. Then you won't end up listening to all those people who gossip, argue, because that one has no meaning, right? You understand Sankara Anicchang, Sankara Dukkang, Dhamma Anatta, then no reality. Then you just move on and do what you need to do. That's why you avoid the foolish, the heedless. You will not pay attention to all those things. And you will know how to, in a very nice way, excuse yourself, then maybe move away. Then all this, you will know how to conduct yourself in a very different way in life. That's how you change. That's how you transform and improve. So this is the part I feel that you need to pay attention to. Okay.
Yeah.
To be more attentive, to have clarity, then to actually have a clear mind, to look at things. Because awareness is the awareness nature. But when you are attentive, when you are like meticulous and all those things, means observant. The other word is observant. Means you pay attention to detail because you are in a new place. It's just like you are studying your own form and mind. You start from zero base, like you don't know anything. You don't know anything, but you want to find out. So you find out through observation, through putting things to test, like investigative. It's the mind investigation. You investigate what the Buddha has spoken or what the teaching has shared with us. Then from there, if it stands up to investigation, you will know, you will understand. Then the other thing is, or you heard the part on fit for attention or not?
Things
that are fit for attention and unfit for attention. You heard that part?
Yes.
Then okay, that one is more important. Because things that are unfit for attention, your negative thought, your asava, or whatever emotion, fear, worry, anxiety, all those things, they will proliferate, become more and more. Then things that are fit for attention, all this disappear. Then the good mind state all will arise, the joy, the happiness, which is the opposite of fear, worry, anxiety, insecurity, sorrow, lamentation, all those things gone. Okay?
Yeah. So thank you, Aditya.
Anyway, there is a question by Kin Yong, I think. I will answer that one first. He was asking, Bertil, what is the difference between mindfulness and heedfulness? I think because Kin Yong is new, that's why he asked that question. So, Kin Yong, you listen. See, to be mindful is to be aware. So, awareness is like before the knowing. Like when you are aware, it's like a baby when they see something or hear something or sense something. The baby don't have memory of what that thing is when they are very, very young, newly born. So, they are conscious of what they see, but they don't have any idea of what they see, means the perception of what, but they see things as they are. So that itself is awareness. Without thought, you are already aware. Okay? Yeah. Then when it comes to attention, means your mind doesn't run away. You pay attention, like you listen attentively. So there is awareness also. But most of the time when people pay attention, they tend to think. They tend to like refer to memory. Especially when you are listening to lecture or whatever, then sometimes you become sleepy, means mental hindrance has come in. Then sometimes you start to doubt, cannot be, because you are using your views, your opinion or judgment. So you see all this movement in your mundane mind. But when you are aware, the awareness can be just aware. But if you want to know, it can know. If you want to follow, if you want to listen, it can listen. Then it can listen from the heart or listen from the brain. Most people don't have that training. They always listen from the brain. There's no other way they can listen. So from the brain means it's very near your memory, your views, your opinion, your conditioning. So that type of listening is with a lot of mental activity on. It's not the clarity of awareness to listen attentively. When you listen, you just listen. You don't comment, you don't judge, you don't do anything, you just listen. Then from the listening, with the wisdom and other, you will know whether it's fit for attention or not, whether that speaker who speak or share has the understanding of Dhamma or truth or not, you will know. Or if it's something beyond you, you never heard before or you want to learn, and then you can pay attention to listen. Then you can learn faster than normal people who use their memory and all those things, because you have clarity or awareness to just listen, attentive, observant, mindful. So that part is mindfulness, means awareness before the knowing is actually mindfulness. But most people cannot be just aware. Their awareness comes with the thought process. So most of them are either attentive or observant with the mental activity together, because they are at the brain there. But those who have trained their mind to be mindful and aware, they are at the heart area. When you are at the heart area, you can pay attention. You can listen from the heart. You can be aware. And it depends on whether you want to know or you don't want to know, or you want to reflect or contemplate, or you want to continue listening. You can. So it's different. So the awareness is just an awareness. Whereas when it comes to heedfulness, heedfulness has more content within. To be heedful, you must not only be mindful, you have to be ever mindful. Your Dhammapada verse 23 defines clearly what heedfulness is. The Buddha said, the constantly meditative and the ever mindful. Or the ever mindful and constantly meditative and steadfast one, they are destined to realize the supreme Nibbana, means that enlightenment state. That's why when you are heedful, you are destined for enlightenment. So heedfulness is to be ever mindful and constantly meditative, means these two components add together. It becomes heedfulness. So when you are heedful, you are both ever mindful and constantly meditative, means constantly using it to cultivate noble eightfold path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So initially you have to train your mundane mind to be mindful first, aware. Then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Means you have fulfilled the first requirement of heedfulness. To be heedful, you have to be ever mindful first, like I told Manyuan. To really go into awareness-based meditation, to be mindful most of the time, you need to stabilize this mindfulness so that your daily mindfulness can be very stable. Then during the formal meditation, you have to stabilize your awareness nature until you can observe clearly the difference between the two nature, the two mind within. One is the true mind, the silent mind, the awareness nature. The other one is the mundane mind, the thinking mind, the dependent originating mind condition. So you stabilize that. So after you stabilize that, your awareness nature within become very stable. Then your daily mindfulness can follow. Otherwise, it's very difficult. That's why you have to do the daily religious routine and training during formal meditation and daily mindfulness training. When you are able to do this, then only you can be heedful. Then after that, you apply this mind, which is already trained to be ever mindful, to develop the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, which is the meditation as taught by the Buddha. So Noble Eightfold Path has a very wide field of cultivation or training. Every path factor is a very, very elaborate chapter, or we should say Dhamma training. Like right view, basically there are three right views, which you have to develop from pariyati, the learning of the teaching, to patipatti, when you meditate, when you awaken, straighten your view. Then only the true wisdom stabilizes. Then after that, you can go to pativeda. You get to reap the fruit of your hard work to live that enlightened life of an enlightened being. Then from right view, you will condition the right thought. But in between, you have to train your mind to be mindful, to be aware, to be heedful. Otherwise, you cannot see your thought process, your mental intention, and you must also know what constitutes evil. Then from the right thought, you will be able to condition the right speech, the right action, and the right way to live your life. That's why the Noble Eightfold Path all are related. From right view, you condition right thought, then right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then to help you do that, you must apply the four right effort to constantly check. Is when you are aware that the unwholesome action, speech, and thought has arisen, you have to apply the right effort to abandon them. There are five ways the Buddha has taught us. The third and the fourth way is the meditative way. So you apply that. But you need to have the quality of mind that is mindful, or very stable mindfulness, which is ever mindful, to do all this. Otherwise, you cannot do all this. Especially the second right effort, to prevent the arising of the wrong thought, wrong speech, and wrong action. You can't. Unless you have stabilized your understanding, then through mindfulness, you not only saw, you understood and straightened your view. Then when you see all this very clearly and very stable, then when they arise, the moment they arise, at that moment, the unisok manasikara, means wisdom at the moment of attention, will surface. That is the Dhamma that it will teach you. Sabbe sankara anicchang, sabbe sankara dukkang, sabbe dhamma natta. Thing is just the way it is. Nature's phenomena, the universal characteristic, condition like that, things like that. So this understanding was based. Then let things be. Then accord and flow. So all this understanding, mighty nature ruling by, all this understanding will enable your mind to actually free, liberate. It will not entangle itself. It will not hold on to it and become like deluded by it. Then you become like entangled by it through further thinking, proliferation of thought. Then you end up in all the argument. In all the what they call conflict, misunderstanding, the emotion, you go and project your thought and all the thing and give meaning. Then you analyze, you go and do analysis and reasoning. So the reasoning is all duality. You reason to be right, to be wrong, why he like that. So all these activity of Sankara has no meaning. It won't solve your problem. Because these are thought-based approach to think. Thought-based approach cannot give rise to wisdom, cannot solve problem. Thought can only evolve as knowledge to make you like smart and clever, but it will not make you wise. You can be intelligent but not wise. So that is where the difference is. Spiritual understanding and this style of understanding is different. Your spiritual understanding is through awareness. It doesn't reason. It doesn't analyze things and like argue through knowledge. No. Where you do that, it cannot evolve into wisdom. You are trapped in thought. Your thought is limited, egoic, selfish. That's why you look at the world full of war, full of conflict, full of difference of opinion and all those things. You look at the Ukraine-Russian crisis. It involves the whole of the European Union, the NATO, and the United States. And they even want to drag all the other countries in. They ask China to help and all those things. But in the first place, who created this problem? It was something very simple. Like now you can see a lot of video. Because Russia say, what you are doing is going against the word of what you have agreed with us. After the Soviet USSR break up, a lot of the country at the boundary of Europe and Russia, they actually break free and become independent. Then NATO state initially agree not to take an inch. But they start to invite them and join NATO until more and more until they came to this Ukraine. They cannot take it already. Ukraine, last time the Germans also went to there to attack Russia. They almost succeeded. But Russia, luckily the country very big, the Scotch policy finally make them win the war, but at great loss and expense of the nation and his people. So all this you can see. So like some American lady journalists, now they know, they say actually it is NATO and the United States that created the war. Well, if you have agreed in principle to what Russia wants, all this no more. Even the United Nations representative came out and testified. He said, when during the discussion, Russia actually came up with two drafts of an agreement, but both were rejected by NATO and US. And now the war started already. They start to point finger and say all those things. But in the first place, you want peace. Then why are you sending in all the armament, everything into Ukraine and want to get Ukraine to join NATO also? Then like Russia put it, your missile, everything is at my border. You can just create issue and problem for me. Whereas last time, the Cuban crisis during Kennedy time, is the same. When Cuba starts to like allow the Russian to come in and put in the thing, Kennedy tell the Russian, oh, you do it, we all go to war. Because it is strategic. So all these are in the United Nations Charter, is mentioned. So if you really have a clear picture of what this dispute conflict is, then you will know. All this need not be. Because if you don't go and instigate and try to create the selfish motive to curb Russia and don't want to allow Russia to gain their own strength again, then you are going to invite trouble and war. Because people can see now, Russia is not the Russia of the 80s and the 90s. When Gorbachev, they all play out when the West and the what there, Yassin. There is a Yassin, I think, before Putin. He also was played out by them. And they break up and created the collapse of the USSR. in the past, the USSR was very big. So what I'm trying to explain to you is conflict comes about through selfish intent and act. So if you understand all this can be resolved. So when you are heedful, when you are mindful, you can develop such wisdom by cultivating noble eightfold path. So your question is very easy to understand now. Mindfulness is just mindfulness awareness. But before you stabilize it, you cannot be ever mindful. But to be heedful, you have to be ever mindful first, then cultivate noble eightfold path. The whole of the noble eightfold path is a very wide topic. Like just now, I summarized the cultivation to you. I stop at right effort, the four right effort. When it comes to right mindfulness, there is this four foundation of mindfulness, which is a very big topic, a very big meditative topic. The four foundation of mindfulness, where you cultivate mindfulness at a higher level to realize anagami shape and arahant shape and beyond. To realize the sainthood way or sotapanna shape and sakadagami shape, first stage and second stage of sainthood, you don't need to cultivate four foundation of mindfulness. Through the first turning, second turning of the four noble truth, you can awaken. You can become sane, a sotapanna or a sakadagami. So this part will complete the explanation that you need to understand the difference between mindfulness or awareness and heedfulness. So thank you for your question, for creating the condition for us to actually develop some sharing. He replied, is it noted, Brother Teo? Still have a lot of, I didn't read the whole thing. Still have a lot to learn. Yeah. Thank you for the wonderful sharing, Sadhu. You can see on the note there. So rejoice too.
Good afternoon, and all Kalamitas also.
Yes.
I just like to say to Brother Teo and thank you very much, Brother Teo, for your last sharing of the Thursday class on how to develop awareness based meditation. There are a lot of very complete
and very complete sharing
what,
that day.
What Brother Teo mentioned there, actually a lot of important points.
Yeah.
And it really worked it in that way.
Yeah. And you all must do a transcript of it. That one is
I did already, but I usually I'm quite slow. Second round to read.
Take your time. Edit, then you send forward.
I find that there is that one is a very complete.
Very complete. I purposely share it because two persons who are new want to learn about meditation.
Yeah, and today King Yong questions, and also Man Yen one also is very good because in fact Man Yen one, if she can understand the process of mundane mind. Then she just do a silent observation. Think it will be faster in that way.
Yeah, it will benefit her.
It benefit her, and she won't be afraid of thoughts next time.
Correct. Yes.
So in fact, she have a more understanding in that part, and because all these are nothing to do with the personality, you know.
Yeah, because that thought is not you.
It's more because a lot last time is that we thought that is something to do with ourselves, you know.
That egoic mind is you thought the fire aggregate is you. That's why it's not you.
But all these are nothing to do with the person. It's more on the process.
The thought process. Then the user of thought through his delusion introduce the content of consciousness which has the wrong view. That's why it's conditioned.
In fact, Brother Teo have been repeating and repeating and remind us on that.
Many times already. Yeah, but people cannot get it. They just cannot get it.
So if once you understand all these mental factors, it's just a process. And then you can accept it. and just observe it with a silent mind,
yeah,
the understanding will arise.
Yeah, then you will break free. That's why the Buddha correct. Say, these five aggregates of form and mind are dependent originating, condition arising. That's why it's not a permanent unchanging entity. And because they are dependent originating, condition arising, it's impermanent. If you cling and hold, you will suffer. That's why the three universal characteristics come from the paticca-samuppada. That's why the Buddha said, if you see paticca-samuppada, you will see the three universal characteristics.
Yes.
But those who insight into the three universal characteristics may not see the paticca-samuppada. They may not know how it lead to that. So that teaching is very, very good. Sadhu to you, Miss Lee, you were very good.
Thank you. Because I since Chinese New Year, I in order to stabilize the sati, I did a self retreat again. And I find it very fruitful, and I still continue.
Very useful, because very you have useful. The understanding to grasp all this point now. That's why you will be able to have the faith to cultivate the way you have developed that understanding. Because those who see, it's very clear one. No need to have that one. No need to check, why no other people teach like that? No need one. Where the Dhamma is pachetang. Those who see the thing, they know, oh, this is the way.
And not easy to present in this way also, Bratio.
That's why I say you need the stability of understanding to express it. A lot of Kayanamita understand and went through, but they cannot express it out. Even Po Cheng cannot express.
Cannot, because you need
you need very stable understanding.
Correct. And once you have the stability, actually the five ways, it start from the third way. The third way and the fourth way is actually automatic way
correct.
Of doing it.
And it will help you understand that all this emotion, the fear, the greed, the restlessness, the anger, the hatred, they are not you. They are conditioned arising mind state. The third way will allow you to understand that very clearly. Where you silent and be with it, then it ceases. Then you realize, it was not there originally. Then how did it arise? Like the Buddha said, trace the origination factor. Then you realize through your senses and your wrong view. You input the content of consciousness through your memory, your views, your opinion, your conditioning, which has not been straightened. That's how it develops delusion. That's how it entangles the living being. The five aggregate of form and mind become grasping aggregate, upadana-khandas. So all this, you will understand. Sadhu, Miss Lee, very good. Sadhu.
Thank you, Brajo. Really now listening to the very meaningful, actually.
Now,
meaningful.
A lot of Kayamita can understand now, even Ingbi, Po Cheng, they all, and Alicia, they all.
And thanks, Ingbi and Po Cheng, reason sharing also.
From their
writing, they have an in-depth understanding of the
teaching. And also Brother Song, they all, Alicia.
Okay, that's all I need to share.
Okay, Sadhu, thank you so much, Miss Lee. We should all rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.